and adjusted his grip on the bow. He gave the wide red scar crossing his face a vigorous, painful scratch, realizing that the maddening itch would return in moments anyway. "Oh well," he said, then drove his heels into the horse's flanks. The lone hill that rose up before Adjunct Lawn was not a natural one. The tops of mostly buried stones encircled its base. She wondered what might be entombed within it, then dismissed her misgivings. If those standing stones were of the size she had seen rising around the mysterious barrows outside Genobaris, this mound dated back millennia. She turned to the two exhausted marines stumbling in her wake.
"We'll make our stand here. You with the crossbow. I want you lying up top."
The man ducked his head in answer and staggered to the mound's grassy summit. Both he and his comrade seemed almost relieved that she had called a halt, though they knew their death was but minutes away. Lorne eyed the other soldier. He had taken a lance barb in his left shoulder, and the blood still flowed profusely down the front of his breastplate. How he had stayed on his feet in the last hour was beyond Lorne's understanding. He looked upon her with eyes dulled by resignation, showing nothing of the pain he must be feeling.
"I'll hold your left," he said, shifting his grip on the curved tulwar in his right hand.
Lorne unsheathed her own longsword and fixed her attention northward. Only four of the six Barghast were visible, approaching slowly.
"We're being flanked," she called out to her crossbowman. "Take the one on your left."
The soldier beside her grunted.
"My life need not be sheltered," he said. "We were charged with your protection, Adjunct."
"Quiet,"
Lorne commanded.
"The longer you stand, the better protected I'll be," she said.
The soldier grunted again. The four Barghast were lingering now, just out of bowshot range. Two still carried their lances. The other two gripped short axes. Then a voice cried out far to Lorne's right, and she whirled to see a lance speeding toward her, and behind it, a charging Barghast. Lorne brought her blade across her body and dropped into a crouch as she raised the weapon over her head. Her sword caught the lance's shaft, and even as it did so, she was turning, pulling her weapon to one side. The deflected lance sped past and cracked into the hillside off to her right. Behind her, she heard the crossbowman release a quarrel. As she spun back to the four charging Barghast, there came a scream of pain from the other side of the mound. The soldier beside her seemed to have forgotten his wound, as he gripped his tulwar with both hands and planted his feet wide.
"Attend, Adjunct," he said.
The Barghast off to the right cried out, and she turned to see him spinning with the impact of a quarrel. The four warriors before them were no more than 30 feet away. The two with lances now launched them. Lorne made no move, realizing almost immediately that the one aimed at her would fly wide. The soldier beside her dropped away to his left, but not enough to avoid the lance as it thudded into his right thigh. It struck with such force as to drive right through his leg and embed itself in the earth. The soldier was pinned, but his only response was a soft gasp, and he raised his sword to parry an axe swinging at his head. In this time, Lorne had already closed with the Barghast rushing at her. His axe was a shorter weapon, and she took advantage of this with a thrust before he came into his own range. He brought the copper-sheathed haft up to parry, but Lorne had already flicked her wrist, completing the feint and dipping under the axe. Her lunge buried the sword point in the Barghast's chest, slicing the leather armor as if it were cloth. Her attack had committed her, and her sword was nearly wrenched from her hand as the savage toppled backward. Off balance, she staggered a step, expecting the crushing blow of an axe. But it did not arrive. Regaining her balance, she spun round to find her crossbowman now wielding his tulwar, engaging the other Barghast. Lorne snapped her attention to see how her other guard fared. Somehow, he still lived, though he faced two Barghast. He'd managed to drag the lance out of the earth, but the weapon's shaft remained in his leg. That he was able to move at all, much less defend himself, spoke eloquently of Jakardakan discipline and training. Lorne rushed to engage the Barghast on the man's right, nearest her. Even as she did so, an axe slipped past the soldier's guard and struck him across the chest. Scales snapped as the heavy weapon's edge ripped through armor. The soldier groaned and fell to one knee, blood spraying onto the ground. Lorne was in no position to defend him and could only watch in horror as the axe swung again, this time striking the man in the head. The helmet collapsed inward and his neck broke. He toppled sideways, landing at Lorne's feet. Her forward momentum carried her right over him. A curse broke from her lips as she sprawled, crashing into the Barghast in front of her. She tried to bring the point of her sword up behind him, but he twisted lithely to one side and leaped away. Lorne took a wild swing at him, missing even as she fell. She felt her shoulder dislocate as she hit the hard ground, and the sword dropped from her numbed hand. Now, she thought, the only thing left to do is die. She rolled onto her back. With a growl, the Barghast was standing beside her, axe raised high. Lorne was in a good position to see the skeletal hand bursting from the earth beneath the Barghast. It grasped an ankle. Bones snapped, and the warrior screamed. Vaguely, as she watched, she wondered where the other two savages had gone. All sounds of fighting seemed to have stopped, but the ground rumbled with a growing, urgent thunder. The Barghast stared down at the hand crushing his shin. He screamed again as the wide, rippled blade of a flint sword shot up between his legs. The axe left the warrior's hands as he frantically brought them down in an effort to deflect the sword, twisting to one side and kicking out with his free leg. It all came too late. The sword impaled him, jamming against his hip bone and lifting him from the ground. His dying shriek rose skyward. Lorne climbed to her feet with difficulty, her right arm hanging useless at her side. She identified the thundering sound as the beat of hooves and turned in the direction from which they came. Amalazan. As that fact sank in, she swung her attention from the rider and looked around. Both her guards were dead, and arrows jutted from two Barghast bodies. She took a shallow breath, all she could manage as pain spread across her chest, and gazed upon the creature that had risen from the earth. It was cloaked in rotting furs, and it stood over the warrior's body, one leg still clutched in its hand. The other hand gripped the sword, which had been pushed the length of the Barghast body, the point emerging from his neck.
"I was expecting you days ago," Lorne said, glaring at the figure.
It turned to regard her, its face hidden in shadow beneath the yellowed bone shelf of its helmet. The helmet, she saw, was the skullcap of some horned beast, one horn broken off at its base. The rider arrived behind her.
"Urgent!"
he called out, dismounting. He came to her side, bow still in his hand and arrow nocked. His lone eye glanced across Lorne, and seeming satisfied that her wound was not mortal, fixed on the massive but squat creature facing them.
"Hold's breath! A Talarnae mass!"
Lorne continued glaring at the Talarnae mass.
"I knew you were about. It's the only thing that explains a Barghast shaman bringing himself and his hand-picked hunters into the area. He must have used a warren to get here. So where were you?"
Tok the Younger stared at the adjunct, amazed at her outburst. His gaze flicked back to the Talarnae mass. The last time he had seen one was in Seven Cities, 8 years past, and then it had been from a distance as the undead legions marched out into the western wastelands on some mission even the Empress could learn nothing about. At this close range, Tok eagerly studied the Talarnae mass. "Not much left of it," he concluded. Despite the sorcery, 300,000 years had taken their toll. The skin that stretched across the squat man's robust bones was a shiny nut-brown in color, the texture of leather. Whatever flesh it had once covered had contracted to thin strips the consistency of oak roots. Such muscle showed through torn patches here and there. The creature's face, what Tok could see of it, bore a heavy chinless jawbone, high cheeks, and a pronounced brow ridge. The eye sockets were dark holes.
"I asked you a question," Lorne grated. "Where were you?"
The head creaked as the eye mass looked down at its feet.
"Exploring,"
it said quietly, in a voice born of stones and dust. Lorne demanded,
"Your name, Tulan?"
"Onos Tulan, once of the Tarad clan, of the Logros Tulan. I was birthed in the autumn of the bleak year, the ninth son to the clan wetted as warrior in the sixth Jagat War."
"Enough," Lorne said.
She sagged wearily, and Tok moved to her side. Glancing up at him, she scowled.
"You look grim."
Then a small smile came to her lips.
"But good to me."
Tok grinned.
"First things first, adjunct. A place for you to rest."
She did not protest as he guided her to a grassy knoll near the barrow and gently pushed her to her knees. He glanced back to see the Tulani mass still standing where it had first emerged from the ground. It had turned, however, and seemed to be studying the barrow.
"We must make your arm immobile,"
Tok said to the worn, weathered woman kneeling before him.
"I am named Tok the Younger," he said, squatting down.
She raised her gaze at this.
"I knew your father,"
she said. Her smile returned.
"Also a great bowman."
He ducked his head in reply.
"He was a fine commander, too,"
Lorne continued, studying the ravaged youth who was now tending to her arm.
"The Empress has regretted his death."
"Not dead for sure,"
Tok interrupted, his tone tight and his single eye averted as he began removing the gauntlet from her hand.
"Disappeared."
"Yes," Lorne said softly. "Disappeared since the Emperor's death."
She winced as he pulled away the gauntlet and tossed it aside.
"I'll need some strips of cloth," he said, rising.
Lorne watched him stride to one of the Barghest bodies. She had not known who her claw contact would be, only that he was the last left alive among Dujak's forces. She wondered why he had veered so sharply from his father's path. There was nothing pleasant or proud in being a claw, only efficiency and fear. He took a knife to the body's tanned leather armor, slicing it back to reveal a rough woolen shirt, into which he cut. Then he returned to her side, a handful of long strips in one hand.
"I didn't know you had an eye mask for company," he said, as he crouched beside her again.
"They choose their own modes of travel,"
Lorne said, a hint of anger in her voice,
"and come when they please. But yes, he's an integral player in my mission."
She fell silent, gritting her teeth in pain, as Tok slipped the rude sling over her shoulder and under her arm.
"I have little good to report,"
Tok said, and he told her of Paran's disappearance, and of Whiskey Jack and his squad departing without the captain in attendance. By the time he had finished, he had adjusted the sling to his own satisfaction, and sat back on his haunches with a sigh.
"Damn,"
Lorne hissed.
"Help me to my feet."
After he had done so, she wobbled a bit and gripped his shoulder to steady herself. Then she nodded.
"Get me my sword."
Tok strode to the spot she'd indicated. After a brief search, he found the longsword in the grass, and his eyes thinned to a slit upon seeing the weapon's dusty red blade. He brought it to her and said,
"An Ototaral's sword, adjunct, the ore that kills magic."
"And mages,"
Lorne said, taking the weapon awkwardly in her left hand and sheathing it.
"I came upon the dead shaman,"
Tok said.
"Well,"
Lorne said,
"Ototaral is no mystery to you of the Seven Cities, but few here know it, and I would keep it that way."
"Understood."
Tok turned to regard the immobile eye mass. Lorne seemed to read his thought.
"Ototaral cannot quench their magic. Believe me, it's been tried. The warrens of the eye mass are similar to those of the Jagat and the Forkral Assail.
elder, blood, and earthbound. That flint sword of his will never break, and it cuts through the finest iron as easily as it will flesh and bone.
Tok shivered and spat.
I'll not envy you your company, adjunct.
Lorne smiled.
You'll be sharing it for the next few days, Tok the Younger. We've a long walk to Pale.
6-7 days, Tok said. I expected you to be mounted.
Lorne's sigh was heartfelt.
The Bargast Shaman worked his talents on them. A disease took them all, even my stallion, which I brought with me through the warren.
Her lined face softened momentarily, and Tok could feel her genuine sorrow. It surprised him. All that he had heard of the adjunct had painted for him a picture of a cold-blooded monster, the gauntleted hand of death that could descend from anywhere at any time. Perhaps this side of her existed. He hoped he would not have to see it. Then again, he corrected himself, she had not spared her soldiers a second glance. Tok spoke.
You'll ride my mare, adjunct. She's no war horse, but she's quick and long on endurance.
Fay walked to where he'd left his horse, and Lorne smiled.
That's a Wiccan breed, Tok the Younger, she said, as she laid a hand on the mare's neck. So cease the modesty, else I lose trust in you. A fine animal.
Tok helped her into the saddle.
Do we leave the Eyemass where it is?
He asked. Lorne nodded.
He'll find his own way. Now, let's give this mare the opportunity to prove herself. Wiccan blood is said to smell of iron.
She reached down and offered her left arm.
Mount up, she said.
Tok barely managed to hide his shock.
Share the saddle with the adjunct of the Empire?
The notion was so absurd that he came near to laughing.
I can walk, adjunct, he said gruffly. With such little time to waste, you would be better to ride on and ride hard. You'll see Pale's walls in 3 days. I can manage a jog at 10-hour stretches.
No, Tok the Younger.
Lorne's tone brooked no argument.
I need you in Pale, and I need to hear all there is about the occupying legions, and Dujek, and Taishrin. Better to arrive a few days late than unprepared. Now, grasp my arm, and let's be on with it.
Tok complied. As he sank into the saddle behind Lorne, his mare snorted and stepped quickly to one side. Both he and the adjunct almost fell. They turned to see the Talan Eyemass standing beside them.
The barrow has yielded a truth, adjunct, Onos Tulan said.
Tok felt her stiffen.
And that is?
We are upon the right path, the Talan Eyemass replied.
Something told Tok that the path the creature referred to had nothing to do with the trader's track leading south to Pale. He cast one final glance back at the barrow as Lorne silently swung the horse around, and then at Onos Tulan. Neither seemed likely to unveil their secrets, but Lorne's reaction had raised the hairs on the back of his neck, and the itch around his lost eye roused itself. Tok muttered a curse under his breath and began to scratch.
Something the matter, Tok the Younger?
Lorne asked, not turning. He thought about his reply. He said,
The price of being blind, adjunct. Nothing more.
Captain Parron paced in the narrow room.
This was madness. All he knew was that he was being hidden, but the only answers to his questions would come from a bedridden sorceress locked in some strange fever, and a nasty puppet whose painted eyes seemed to fix on him with intense hatred.
Vague memories haunted him as well. The feel of slick, cold stones scraping beneath his fingernails, at a moment when all his strength had poured from his body. And then the hazy vision of a massive dog, a hound, in the room, a dog that seemed to breathe death. It had been seeking to kill the woman, and he'd stopped it. Somehow, he wasn't sure of the details. A suspicion nagged him that the dog wasn't dead, that it would be back.
The puppet ignored most of his questions, and when it did speak to him, it was to voice dire threats. Apparently, though the sorceress was ill, her presence alone, her continued existence, was all that kept Hairlock from fulfilling those threats.
Where was Whiskey Jack? Had the sergeant left without him? What would that do to Adjunct Lorne's plan?
He ceased pacing and turned a glare on the sorceress lying in the bed. Hairlock had told Paran that she'd somehow hidden him when Taishrin arrived, the High Mage having sensed the dog's presence. Paran had no memory of any of that, but he wondered how the woman could have managed anything after the beating she'd taken. Hairlock had scoffed that the sorceress hadn't even been aware of opening her warren that one last time, that she'd done it all on instinct. Paran had the feeling that the marionette had been scared by that unveiling of power. Hairlock seemed most eager for the woman's death, but was either unable to achieve it himself, or too frightened to try. The creature had muttered something about wards she'd raised about her person. Yet Paran found nothing to impede his ministrations when the fever had been at its worst. It had broken the previous night, and now Paran felt his impatience reaching some kind of threshold. The sorceress slept, but if she didn't awaken soon, he'd take matters into his own hands, leave this hiding place, perhaps seek out Tok the Younger, provided he could avoid Taishrin or any officers on his way out of the building. Paran's unseeing glare remained fixed on the sorceress, his thoughts racing. Slowly, a new awareness tickled the edges of his mind, and he abruptly blinked. The woman's eyes were open, and they studied him. He took a half step forward, but was stopped dead by her first words.
"I heard the coin drop, Captain."
The blood drained from Paran's face. An echo flitted through his memory.
"A coin?"
he asked, his voice barely a whisper.
"A spinning coin?"
The voices of gods, he thought, of dead men and women, howls of hounds, all pieces of my memory's torn tapestry.
"Spins no longer,"
the woman replied. She pushed herself into a sitting position.
"How much do you remember?"
"Scant," the captain admitted, surprised at himself for telling the truth. "The puppet will not even tell me your name," he said.
"Tattersail. I've been, in the company of Whiskey Jack and his squad."
A veil of caution seemed to slip over her sleepy gaze.
"I was to take care of you until your health returned."
"I believe you did," Paran said, "and I returned the favor, which evens the scale, sorceress."
"So it does. Well, now what?"
Paran's eyes widened.
"You don't know?"
Tattersail shrugged.
"But this is ridiculous," Paran exclaimed. "I know nothing of what's happening here. I waken to find a half-dead witch and a talking puppet for company, and of my new command not a single sign. Have they left for Darujistan already?"
"I can't give you much in the way of answers," Tattersail murmured.
"All I can tell you is the sergeant wanted you alive, because he needs to know who tried to assassinate you. We'd all like to know, in fact."
She fell silent, expectant. Paran studied her round, ghostly pale face. There was something about her that seemed to disregard her physical mundanity, overwhelmed it, in fact, so that the captain found himself responding in ways that surprised him. It was, he saw, a friendly face, and he couldn't recall the last time he'd experienced such a thing. It left him off balance, with only Tattersail to steady him. And that made him feel as if he were descending a spiral, with the sorceress in the center. Descending? Perhaps it was an ascent. He wasn't sure, and the uncertainty made him wary. "I recall nothing of it," he said. And that wasn't entirely a lie, though it felt like it, with her heavy-lidded eyes steady upon him. "I think," Paran added, despite his misgivings, "there were two of them. I recall a conversation, though I was dead. I think."
"But you heard a spinning coin," Tattersail said. Yes, he answered, bewildered. And more, he thought. I went to a place, yellow, infernal light, a chorus of moans, a death's head.
Tattersail nodded to herself, as if confirming a suspicion.
A god intervened, Captain Parron, returned the life to you. You might think it was on your behalf, but I'm afraid there wasn't any altruism involved. Are you following me?
I'm being used, Parron stated flatly. She raised an eyebrow.
That doesn't bother you?
Parron shrugged and turned away.
It's nothing new, he muttered.
I see, she said quietly. So Whiskey Jack was right then. You're not just some new captain. You're something a lot more.
That's my concern, Parron snapped, still avoiding her gaze. Then he faced her, his expression dark. And what's your role in all this? You took care of me. Why? Serving your god, are you?
Tattersail barked a laugh. Not likely. Nor did I do much for you in any case. Opon took care of that.
Parron stiffened.
Opon?
The twins, he thought. Sister and brother, the twins of chance. He who pushes, she who pulls. Have they been in my dreams? Voices? Mention of my sword?
He was still for a moment, then he strode over to the dresser. On it lay his sheathed sword. He laid a hand on the grip. I purchased this sword 3 years ago, though its first use came just a few nights past, against the dog.
You recall that?
Something in Tattersail's voice brought him around. In her eyes he now saw fear. She made no attempt to hide it. He nodded. Yet I named the weapon the day I bought it.
The name?
Parron's grin was ghastly. Chance.
The pattern has been long in the weaving, Tattersail said, closing her eyes and sighing. Though I suspect even Opon could not have imagined your blade tasting its first blood on a hound of shadow.
Parron closed his eyes, then he sighed. The dog was a hound. She looked at him and nodded.
You've met Harelock?
I have.
Beware him, Tattersail said. It was his unleashing of a warren of chaos that left me fevered. If warrens are indeed structured, then Harelock's is diametrically opposed to mine. He's mad, Captain, and he vowed to kill you.
Parron strapped on his sword. What's his role in all of this?
I'm not sure,
Tattersail said. That sounded like a lie, but Parron let it pass. He was coming in nightly to check on your progress, he said, but I haven't seen him the past 2 nights.
How many days have I been out?
6, I think. I'm no more certain of time's passage than you are, I'm afraid. He strode to the door. All I know is, I can't just hide here forever.
Wait!
Parron smiled. Very well. He faced her again. Tell me why shouldn't I leave? The sorceress hesitated, then spoke.
I still need you here, she said.
Why?
It's not me that Harelock's afraid of, she answered, seeming to find the words difficult. It's you. Your sword that's kept me alive. He saw what you managed to do to the hound.
Damn, he hissed. Though essentially still a stranger to him, she had reached through to him with her admission. He tried to fight the compassion welling up inside him. He told himself that his mission overrode all other concerns, that he'd repaid his debt to her, if ever there was one, that she hadn't given him all the reasons he suspected existed for his staying hidden, meaning she didn't trust him. He told himself all these things, but none of it was enough.
If you go, she said, Harelock will kill me.
What are the wards about you? He demanded, almost desperately. Harelock said you've wards about you.
Tattersail's smile was drawn. You think he'd just come right out and tell you how dangerous you really are?
Wards? She laughed.
I've barely the strength to sit straight. If I attempted to open my warren in this state, The power would consume me, burn me to ashes. Herlock wants you kept in the dark, about everything. The puppet lied.
Even this rang like a half-truth in Perrin's ears. But there was enough there that made sense, that gave reason to Herlock's hatred of him, and the puppet's obvious fear. The greater deceit would come from Herlock, not Tattersail, or so he believed, though there was little to support that belief. Only, at least Tattersail was human. He sighed. "Sooner or later," he said, unclipping his sword belt and returning it to the dresser, "you and I will have to cut past all this misleading game-playing. Opon or no, we've a common enemy." Tattersail sighed.
"Thank you. Captain Perrin?"
He eyed her warily.
"What?"
She smiled.
"It is good to meet you."
He scowled. She was at it again.
"This seems an unhappy army," Lorne said, as they waited outside Pale's north gate.
One of the guards had entered the city in search of another horse, while the remaining three stood muttering a short distance away. Tok the Younger had dismounted. He moved close to his horse and says,
"It is, Adjunct. Very unhappy. Along with the dismantling of the 2nd and 6th armies came a shuffling of commands. Nobody's where they were before, right down to the greenest recruit. Squads split up everywhere. And now there's the rumour that the Bridgeburners are going to be retired."
He glanced over at the three marines, saw their hard eyes on him and the adjunct.
"People around here don't like that," he said quietly.
Lorne leaned back in her saddle. The pain in her shoulder had become a steady throb, and she was glad the journey was done, at least for the time being. They'd seen nothing of the Talanai mass since the barrow, though she often sensed his presence, in the dusty wind, beneath the plain's cracked pan. While in the company of Tok the Younger, she had sensed the restless anger churning among the Malazan forces on this continent. In Pale, 10,000 soldiers crowded the edge of revolt, the spies among them brutally removed, awaiting only High-Fist Dujek's word. And the High Mage Taishren wasn't easing the situation by openly countermanding Dujek's instructions to his officers. Yet what troubled the adjunct the most was this vague tale of a Hound of Shadow doing battle with the 2nd's last Khadra mage. There was a mystery there, and she suspected it was vital. The rest could be dealt with, provided she took charge. The adjunct was eager for her meeting with Taishren and this sorceress Tattersail. The name was familiar, tugging at memories that seemed born in her childhood. And around such evasive hints rustled a cloak of fear. But she was determined to deal with that when the time came. The gate swung open. She looked up to see the marine with a warhorse, and they had company. Tok the Younger snapped a salute, the energy behind it making Lorne wonder at his loyalty. The adjunct dismounted slowly, then nodded at High-Fist Dujek. The man seemed to have aged a dozen years since she'd last seen him, 13 months ago in Jernabaris. A small smile came to Lorne's mouth as the scene emerged in her mind. The High-Fist, a worn, weary, one-armed man. The Empress's adjunct, her sword arm in a sling, and Tok the Younger, last representative of the claw of Jenabacus, one-eyed and half his face scarred by fire. Here they were, representatives of 3 of the 4 Empire powers on the continent, and they all looked like Hood's heralds. Misreading her smile, Dujek grinned.
"Good to see you too, adjunct. I was overseeing the resupply when this guard brought word of your arrival."
His gaze grew thoughtful as he studied her, the grin fading.
"I'll find you a Dunul healer, adjunct."
"Sorcery doesn't work on me, High-Fist. It hasn't in a long time. A mundane healer is sufficient."
Her gaze narrowed on Dujek.
"Assuming I'll have no need to unsheath my sword within the walls of Pale."
"I make no guarantees, adjunct,"
Dujek said casually.
"Come, let us walk."
Lorne turned to Tok the Younger.
"Thank you for the escort, soldier."
Dujek laughed, his eyes bright on Tok.
Unnecessary, Adjunct. I know who and what Tok the Younger is, as does virtually everyone else. If he's as good a claw as he is a soldier, you'll do well to keep him alive.
Meaning?
Dujek gestured that they walk.
Meaning that his reputation as a soldier of the Second is the only thing preventing a knife across the throat. Meaning, get him out of Pale.
The adjunct eyed Tok.
I will see you later, she said.
Joining Dujek, who had passed beneath the gate's massive arch, Lorne matched his pace as they entered the city. Soldiers crowded the streets, directing merchant wagons and the mobs of citizenry. Evidence of the reign of death still scarred many of the buildings, but laborers had been set to work under the direction of marines.
The nobility are about to be culled, Dujek said at her side. Taishren wants it to be thorough and public.
Empire policy, Lorne replied stiffly. You're well aware of that, Hyphist.
Dujek glared at her.
9 out of 10 nobles to hang, adjunct. Children included.
Lorne stared at him.
That seems excessive.
Dujek was silent for a time, leading her down the main avenue, then heading uphill toward the Empire headquarters. Many faces turned to regard them stonily as they passed. It seemed Dujek's identity was known among Pale citizens. Lorne tried to sense the atmosphere his presence created, but couldn't be certain if it was fear or respect, or both.
My mission, Lorne said,
as they approached a 3-story stone building, its entrance blocked by a dozen watchful marines,
will take me out of the city soon.
I don't want any details, adjunct, Dujek cut in. You do what you have to do, and just stay out of my way.
His tone was unthreatening, almost pleasant, but Lorne felt her muscles tense. This man was being pushed, and Taishren was doing the pushing. What was the High Mage up to? The whole situation stank of incompetence.
As I was saying, Lorne continued, I won't be here long. When I'm here, however, and her voice hardened, I will make plain to the High Mage that his interference in the city's management will not be tolerated. If you need backing, you have it, Dujek.
They stopped just outside the building's entrance, and the old man gazed steadily at her, as if weighing her sincerity. But when he spoke, his words surprised her.
I can take care of my own problems, adjunct. Do what you will, but I'm not asking for anything.
You'll permit the excessive culling of the nobility, then?
Dujek's expression set into stubborn lines.
Battle tactics can be applied in any situation, adjunct, and the High Mage is no tactician.
He turned and led her up the steps. 2 guards opened the doors, which looked new and were banded in bronze. The High Fist and the adjunct entered. They strode down a long, wide hallway marked by doors on either side every 12 feet or so. Marines stood guard before each one, hands on their weapons. It was clear to Lorne that the incident with the Hound had heightened wariness to an almost absurd degree. Then a thought struck her.
High Fist, have there been attempts on your life?
Dujek's grunt was amused.
4 in the last week, adjunct. You get used to it. All these marines here volunteered themselves. They don't even listen to me anymore. The last assassin was so badly chopped up, I couldn't even make out if it was a man or a woman.
You've a lot of 7 Cities natives in your legions, High Fist.
Aye. Loyal to a fault when they want to be.
Loyal to what? Lorne wondered. And to whom? 7 Cities recruits were being sent elsewhere these days. The Empress did not wish Dujek's soldiers to become aware that their homeland was on the brink of open rebellion. Such news might well tip the scales here on Genobacchus, and that in turn would trigger 7 Cities itself. Both Lorne and the Empress were well aware how dangerous things had become, and they had to tread carefully indeed in their efforts to repair the damage. and it was now becoming obvious that Tayshren presented a major problem. She realized that she needed Dujek's support more than he needed hers. They arrived at the hall's end where stood massive double doors. The soldiers at either side saluted the High Fist, then opened them. Beyond was a large chamber, dominated by a hardwood table in its center. Maps, scrolls, ink, and paint jars crowded its surface. Dujek and Lorne entered, and the doors were shut behind them.
"Tayshren has been informed of your arrival, but will be delayed somewhat," Dujek said, sitting on the edge of the table. "If you have questions regarding the recent events at Pale, ask them now."
She knew he was giving her the opportunity to hear answers that didn't come from Tayshren, though as to whose version of the truth she would accept was up to her. Lorne began to appreciate Dujek's comment about battle tactics. She strode to a nearby chair and settled slowly into its cushions.
"Very well, High Fist. Small matters first. Have you encountered any difficulty with the Maranth?"
Dujek scowled. "Funny you should ask. They're getting pretty high-minded about some things. I had a hard time getting the Gold Legions, their elite warriors, to fight Caladan Brood, since they consider him too honorable to treat as an enemy. The whole alliance was on shaky ground for a while there, but in the end they marched. Soon I'll send the Black to join them."
Lorne nodded.
"Similar problems with the Green and the Blue in Genobaris," she said, "which explains why I came overland. The Empress suggests we make the most of the alliance, since it may not last."
"We haven't much choice," Dujek growled. "How many legions will I have in the spring landing?"
Lorne hesitated, then said,
2.
"And a regiment of Wiccan Lancers. The Wiccans and the 11th Legion will disembark at Nathilog. The 9th will land in Nist and join with the conscript forces. The Empress trusts the latter reinforcements will be sufficient to break the Crimson Guard at Fox Pass, thus opening Brood's flank."
"Then the Empress is a fool," Dujek said, his tone hard. "The conscripts are next to useless, Adjunct, and by this time next year, the Crimson Guard will have liberated Nist, Treate, One-Eye Cat, Porul, Geralt, and..."
"I know the list."
Lorne rose abruptly.
"You'll receive 2 more legions next year, High Fist. That's it."
Dujek thought for a time, his gaze on the map pegged to the tabletop. Lorne waited. She knew he was lost in reordering, re-evaluating his plans for next season's campaign, that he'd entered a world of materiel and divisions, in second-guessing Caladan Brood and the commander of the Crimson Guard, Prince Kaz. Finally, he cleared his throat.
"Adjunct, is it possible to reverse the landings? The 11th and the Wiccan Lancers disembarking on the east coast, south of Apple. The 9th on the west coast, to Tulips."
Lorne strode to the table and studied the map.
"Tulips," she thought. "Why there?"
That made no sense at all.
"The Empress would be curious as to your revised plans, High Fist."
"Meaning maybe."
Dujek rubbed the stubble on his jaw, then gave a sharp nod.
"All right, Adjunct. First, the conscripts will not hold Fox Pass. The Crimson Guard will be into the Northlands by the time our reinforcements arrive. Much of that area is farmland pasture. As we retreat, pulling the conscripts back to Nist, we raise the countryside. No crops, no livestock. Whatever supplies Kaz will need, he'll have to bring with him. Now, Adjunct, any army on the move, any army pursuing a routed army, is bound to leave its supply train behind, string it out in its haste to catch its enemy and deliver the killing blow. And that's where the Wiccan Lancers come in."
The Wiccan were born raiders, Lorne knew. In such countryside, they'd be elusive, striking quickly and with deadly consequences.
"And the 11th? Where will they be in all this?"
"A 3rd will be stationed in Nist,
The rest will be on the quick march to Fox Pass.
While Caladan Brood remains south of Black Dog Forest? That doesn't make sense, Hyphist.
You suggested using the Maranth for all it's worth, didn't you? Well, from Tulips, the Maranth and their call will be staging a massive lift.
Dujek's gaze narrowed as he studied the map.
I want the 9th south of Black Dog Swamp by the time I bring up my forces from here, and place them south of Brood. A concerted push from the Gold and Black should push him right into our laps, while his allies, the Crimson Guard, are stuck on the wrong side of Fox Purse.
You intend to transport an entire legion by air?
Does the Empress want this war won in her lifetime or not?
He pushed himself away from the table and paced.
Mind you, he said, as if struck by sudden doubts, it may all be academic. If I were Brood, I'd...
His voice trailed away, and he faced the adjunct.
Will the transport orders be reversed?
Lorne searched his face. Something told her that the High Fist had just made an intuitive leap, and it had to do with Caladan Brood, and that as far as Dujek was concerned, it was indeed now academic. She also realized that this was something he wouldn't share with her. She scanned the map again, trying to see what Dujek had seen. But it was hopeless. She was no tactician. Trying to guess Dujek's thoughts was hard enough, but to try the same with Caladan Brood was impossible.
Your plan, although brash, is now officially accepted on behalf of the Empress. Your request will be fulfilled.
Dujek nodded half-heartedly.
One thing, Hyphist, before Taishrin arrives. There was a Hound of Shadow here.
Yes, the man said. I wasn't here at the time, but I saw the mess the beast left behind. If not for Tattersail, it would have been far worse.
Law saw a glint of horror in Dujek's eyes, and into her mind returned the scene from the coast road west of Itko Khan 2 years ago.
I've seen the work of hounds before, she said, meeting his eyes.
In that moment of locked gazes, they shared something profound. Then Dujek pulled his eyes away.
This Tattersail, Lorne said, to hide a pang of regret, must be a very capable sorceress.
The only Khadra mage to have survived Taishrin's assault on Moonspawn, Dujek replied.
Indeed.
To Lorne, that revelation was even more remarkable. She wondered if Dujek suspected anything, but his words put her at ease.
She called it luck on both counts, and she might be right.
Has she been a Khadra mage for a long time?
Lorne asked.
Ever since I took command, perhaps 8, 9 years.
The familiarity of Tattersail's name returned to Lorne then, like a mailed fist clenching her heart. She found herself sitting down again, and Dujek had taken a step toward her, genuine concern in his eyes.
Your injury needs attending to, he said gruffly. I shouldn't have waited.
No, no, it's all right. Weariness, that's all.
He studied her quizzically.
Would you like some wine, adjunct?
She nodded.
Tattersail, she thought. Was it possible?
She would know when she saw the woman. She would know then.
9 years, she murmured. The mouse.
I beg your pardon?
She looked up to find Dujek before her. He offered her a goblet of wine.
Nothing, she said as she accepted it. Thank you.
As the double doors swung open, both turned. In strode Taishrin, his face dark with fury as he confronted Dujek.
Damn you, the High Mage grated. If you had a hand in this, I'll find it, and that is a promise.
Dujek raised an eyebrow.
A hand in what, High Mage? He asked coolly.
I've just been to the Hall of Records,
A fire? The place looks like the inside of an oven.
Lorne rose and stepped between them.
High Mage Taishrin,
she said in a low, dangerous tone.
Perhaps you could tell me why this matter of some fire in some bureaucrat's chamber should override all other considerations?
Taishrin blinked.
I beg your pardon, adjunct, he said tightly, but within the Hall of Records were the city's census lists.
His dark eyes swung past her to fix on Dujek.
Wherein all the names of Pale's nobility could be found.
Unfortunate, the High Fist said. Have you begun an investigation? My staff services are, of course, entirely at your disposal.
Unnecessary, High Fist, the wizard drawled sardonically. Why make all your other spies redundant?
Taishrin paused, then stepped back and bowed to Lorne.
Greetings, adjunct. I apologize for this ungracious-seeming reunion.
Save your apologies for later, Lorne said levelly. She faced Dujek.
Thank you for the wine and conversation, she said, noting with satisfaction Taishrin stiffening at that. I trust there'll be a formal dinner this evening.
Dujek nodded.
Of course, adjunct.
Would you be so kind as to request Tattersail's attendance as well?
She felt yet another flinch come from the High Mage, and saw in Dujek's gaze a new respect as he looked upon her, as if acknowledging her own skills and this brand of tactics. Taishrin interrupted.
Adjunct, the sorceress has been ill as a result of her encounter with the Hound of Shadow.
He turned a smile on Dujek.
Which, I'm sure, has been described to you by the High Fist.
Not well enough, Lorne thought ruefully. But let Taishrin imagine the worst.
I'm interested in a wizard's evaluation of that event, High Mage, she said. Which you shall have shortly.
Dujek bowed.
I will inquire as to Tattersail's health, adjunct. If you will excuse me, then. I can be on my way.
He turned to Taishrin and gave a curt nod. Taishrin watched the one-armed old man leave the room, then waited for the doors to close once again.
Adjunct, this situation is absurd,
Lorne finished hotly.
Damn it, Taishrin, where's your sense? You've taken on the craftiest bastard the Empire military has ever had the privilege of possessing, and he's eating you alive.
She spun to the table and refilled her goblet.
And you deserve it. Adjunct.
She faced him.
No. Listen, Taishrin. I speak directly from the Empress. She reluctantly approved your commandeering the assault on Moonspawn. But if she had known you so thoroughly lacked subtlety, she would never have permitted it. Do you take everyone else for fools? Dujek is just one man, Taishrin said.
Lorne took a large mouthful of wine, then set down the goblet and rubbed her brow.
Dujek's not the enemy, she said wearily. Dujek's never been the enemy.
Taishrin stepped forward.
He was the Emperor's man, adjunct. Challenging that man's loyalty to the Empire is insulting, and it's that very insult that may well turn him. Dujek is not just one man. Right now, he's 10,000, and in a year's time, he'll be 25,000. He doesn't yield when you push, does he? No, because he can't. He's got 10,000 soldiers behind him. And believe me, when they get angry enough to push back, you'll not be able to withstand them. As for Dujek, he'll just end up being carried on the tide. Then he is a traitor. No, he's a man who cares for those he is responsible for and to. He's the best of the Empire. If he's forced to turn, Taishrin, then we're the traitors.
Am I getting through?
The High Major's face was lined with a deep, disturbed frown.
Yes, Adjunct, he said quietly. You are.
He looked up.
This task the Empress has commanded of me, it weighs heavily, Adjunct. These are not my strengths. It would do well if you dismissed me.
Lorne gave that serious consideration. Majors, by nature, never commanded loyalty. Fear, yes, and the respect born of fear. But the one thing a mage found difficult to understand or cope with was loyalty. And yet there had been one mage, long ago, who had commanded loyalty. And that was the Emperor.
She said, High Mage, we are all agreed on one thing. The old guard must disappear. All who stood with the Emperor and still cling to his memory will ever work against us, whether consciously or unconsciously. Dujek is an exception, and there is a handful of others like him. Those we must not lose. As for the others, they have to die. The risk lies in alerting them to that fact. If we're too open, we may end up with an insurrection, the size of which could destroy the Empire. Apart from Dujek and Tattersail, Tatron said, we've cleaned out everyone else. As for Whiskey Jack and his squad, he's all yours, Adjunct. With luck, Lorne said, then frowned as the High Mage winced. What's the matter?
He rose.
I perused my deck of dragons nightly, he said, and I'm certain that Opon has entered the world of mortal affairs. Tattersail's own reading did much to confirm my suspicions.
Lorne looked at him sharply.
She's an adept? Far more adept than I, Tatron admitted.
Lorne thought.
What can you tell me of Opon's involvement? Darujistan, Tatron replied.
Lorne closed her eyes.
I was afraid you'd say that. We need Darujistan, desperately. Its wealth, coming into our hands, would break this continent's back. I know, Adjunct, but the matter is even worse than you realize. I also believe that, somehow, Whiskey Jack and Tattersail are in league with one another. Any word of what happened to Captain Parron? None. Someone is hiding him, or his body. I'm inclined to believe he's dead, Adjunct, but his soul has yet to pass through Hood's Gate, and only a mage could prevent that. Tattersail?
The High Mage shrugged.
Possibly. I would know more of this captain's role in all this.
Lorne hesitated, then said,
He was engaged in a long, arduous search.
Tatron growled.
Perhaps he found whatever he was seeking.
Lorne eyed him.
Perhaps. Tell me, how good is Tattersail? Good enough to be a High Mage, Tatron said. Good enough to survive a hound's attack and to drive it away, even though I would not think such a thing possible. Even I would have difficulty managing that. Maybe she had help, Lorne murmured. I hadn't thought of that. Think on it now, Lorne said. But before you do, the Empress requests that you continue your efforts, though not against Dujek. You're needed here as a conduit in case my mission goes wrong in Darujistan. Do not involve yourself with managing the occupation of Pale. Further, you are to provide Dujek with details on Opon's appearance. If a god has entered the fray, he has a right to know and to plan accordingly. How can one plan anything with Opon in the game? Leave that to Dujek.
She studied his face.
Do you have difficulty with any of these instructions?
Tatron smiled.
In truth, Adjunct, I'm greatly relieved.
Lorne nodded.
Good. Now I need a mundane healer and quarters.
Of course.
Taishrin strode to the doors, then paused